You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 14 November. We've got local mining production data later this morning. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kamran Mapuwani. Great results. Virgin Active, which is about 60% of the business. Premier, which is about 28% of the business. I don't know, they weren't the worst results at all. The market certainly liked them. Bene Sega from Debtbusters. Consumer income growth is not keeping pace with inflation. And then Christopher Dobb from iStore South Africa. Shifting mindsets on pre-owned tech. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. City of Cape Town hopes to unlock new Greenpoint mixed-use development site located at Three Anchor Bay. Business Day, Treasury releases proposal for second phase of carbon tax. Proposed changes would see effective carbon tax rates on SA businesses increasing in 2026. Morning markets. The US was mixed. The S&P was up a point, 0.02%. The NASDAQ was down 0.2%. The East is mixed. Sydney down 0.05%. Tokyo's up 0.8%. Hong Kong down 0.6%. And Tencent up 2%. Commodities, red. Gold, 2,589. Brent, 72.16. Platinum, 9.41. Palladium, 9.27. The Rand, 18.24. Bitcoin, $90,000 on the nose. Top 40 opening call, 145 points green, 0.2% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Kamran Mapuwani, independent analyst. Come and appreciate the early morning. The Brait results which came out yesterday. And I have to confess, I still remember Brait from, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years ago when it was a private equity fund and I think trading at about 180 Rand. Now it's 180 cents. But Virgin Active, not bad numbers. Premier we saw earlier in the week, not bad numbers. That's almost 90% of the business. They've recapitalized with that rights issue. Your take on the business and the opportunity here?
Yeah, I feel like we always talk about these investment holding companies, Simon. but this is one of those, I think, you know, if you had taken the risk earlier in the year, or maybe not exactly at the beginning of the year, but you came in once you saw the changes being made. So, you know, we always talk about the fact that discount to NAV is a concern for investors. How do you unlock the real value of the underlying assets? And them listing Premier, that was one way to do it. That was the first step. And then, as you said, this recapitalization has given some breathing room as well. So I definitely think steps in the right direction, but all it's done is just taken the share price back to the start of the year's price. Still very underwater from a year ago. But you're seeing the green shoots come through, and that's specifically from Premier Foods at the moment.
It is from Premier Foods, and I chatted with CEO earlier in the week, and they had really good numbers. But my concern around Virgin is it kind of makes me think of DSTV, which is, yes, the gyms are great and everything, but there's cheap competitors coming through. I don't need to spend so much. I don't know that it necessarily has a moat, and maybe that's part of the worry around valuations.
Yeah, I think Brait has definitely tried to, reinvigorate and re-energize the story around Virgin. You know, having exclusive clubs, changing the layouts of them and the finishes, etc. But as you say, it's still a gym. you came out of COVID, tried to get people back into the gym was an issue. And we've seen there's a lot of behavior after COVID that's never gone back to pre-COVID. Having said that, I think for Virgin, I'm surprised that, you know, gyms in the format that they are still exist. But that's just me, a non-gym goer, I guess. but it's one of those where, you know, you look, they've got these active memberships up, which is also, I think, good news for the company. And that's across the board. I think that, you know, as much as we can lament the other assets, this obviously is the key one, being such a big portion of the assets for Brait.
Yep, and I love that line. It's still a gym. I mean, that's it. At the end of the day, it is a gym. It is largely a utility. I mean, we can get to gym many different ways. Kamal Meplani, independent analyst, always appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Technis Panasega from Debt Busters. The debt index for third quarter of 2024 is out. But I have a lot in this, and I want to drill into some of it. But perhaps the two that really stood out for me, and we have touched on this before. Since 2016, take-home pay up 2%, inflation up 46%. It's not that South Africans are out there buying big screen TVs. It's that they have been squeezed by inflation.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think, you know, inflation is driven predominantly by a few things. One is, of course, petrol price, which we see that it's quite significantly higher. It's double of what it was back then. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is electricity price. And there, that's more than doubled over that same period. In fact, it's about 235% higher than what it was in 2016, if you want to be exact. And I think those two things are driving a lot of the inflationary pressures that we have. We can argue one of them is homegrown and the other one is more international with regards to the petrol price. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, those are significant input costs. And I think that's what's really driving, you know, what's happening with regards to the need for consumers to borrow. And that's why we end up with having conversations about the debt situation of the South African consumer.
Yeah, and the stark reality is power and petrol are not things that are easy to reduce in the budget. You need to get to work and you need to turn your lights on in the evening. You mentioned the squeeze. I mean, we are seeing a rise in unsecured debt, which is, I mean, debt is worrying, but unsecured debt is up to 49% in the third quarter. And this is a big number.
Yeah, it is. And I think, as we say, it's always about the mix of the debt that really hurts us. In our case, as you say, 49% of the incoming cohort's debt is unsecured. And what is that? It's expensive personal loans and credit card agreements. In fact, we've noticed that the average interest rate for those agreements is 26.7% per annum.
Wow.
Now, if you contextualize that, that's really expensive credit. Now, our hope is that people would be realistic and actually look at when they are borrowing. I suspect many consumers don't. And as a result, we end up in a situation where half of the money we owe is coming from really expensive debt, which in turn means we have to spend a lot more than half of our salaries in terms of repaying those. And in fact, we found that almost 66% of take-home pay was what was needed on average for consumers to service these debt repayments. So I think it's a bit of a vicious cycle. You know, we're hoping that in the next few quarters, the situation stabilizes when it comes to consumer confidence, but also other things such as income growth, that we'll see a better picture.
Yeah, and hopefully rates down. Because the other thing that you see is that 53% of people who, when they apply for debt counseling, had the 1 month, the payday loans, which is really an indication of a person in crisis.
Yeah, that's a very, very acute indicator of the situation that our clients are in. Exactly as you say, more than half had a loan that had to be repaid in 1 month. And we all know those come at really expensive interest rates. And, you know, it's just an indicator of the pressures on the finances in that particular month.
And the other thing which always, and we've touched on this before when we chat, is, you know, a lot of folks are thinking this is, you know, the low income people who are really struggling. And make no mistake, they are struggling. But the actual debt levels for those with a 35,000 take home per month, I mean, the debt ratio is 176%. I mean, this is not just low income. This is the higher income households as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it has been the consistent story for the last 2 years, at least for the last 2 years. Those are the people that are under pressure the most. Mm-hmm. And why is that? It's because of a few reasons. One, they generally tend to support a larger number of individuals as the main breadwinner in the household. And secondly, since COVID, let's be honest that our economy hasn't really fully recovered. Even now, you know, 5 years down the line, more or less 5 years. And as a result, the growth in terms of high income earners in the country hasn't kept a pace with the population growth. And as a result, the ever shrinking number of high earning individuals who are attractive lending prospects and ending up getting larger loans. And as a result, their debt pile continues growing So I think, again, it's a bit of a vicious cycle, unfortunately. And we're hoping that with, you know, some of the job numbers yesterday were promising with regards to unemployment. We're hoping that if we can have at least a year's worth of consistent data when it comes to increased employment, that we will be having a slightly more positive conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, interest rates moving in the right direction. The one really glimmer of good news, you talk around the consumers graduating from debt counseling, in other words, successfully receiving a clearance certificate, going through the process, almost 9 times higher than the same period in 2016. Part of that would say, well, that's a lot more people going into debt counseling. I would take the more optimistic side of the coin that says it's a lot more awareness around debt counseling and being in debt, which is, no one wants to get to that point, but it's a good metric.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the one that it makes our team the most proud. We want to see more of the people achieving that. And I think I just want to contextualize something there. As you said, 9 times more, those individuals that graduated in Q3 2024 over the course of their debt counseling period paid over 660 million rands to their creditors. And that's a large number that, you know, creditors can put to good use. They can relend that money to small businesses where we desperately need lending for small businesses. They can lend it to individuals. They can lend it to new businesses that haven't been set up, and it can get the economy going. So I think, you know, these individuals are my heroes. They're doing their bit in terms of being doing the responsible thing and paying back their debt. And at the same time, making sure a big chunk of money is finding its way back to the economy as well to help others.
And that's a good point, because this is not sort of entering into insolvency or bankruptcy. Is that in debt counseling, you're still paying back probably a good chunk of the debt, if not all of it. This isn't absolving you of your debt. And it's a critically important process for the broader economy, as you mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. We have the best system in the world, Simon, in terms of a debt remedy for consumers who are struggling to repay back their debt. And what is that? It's debt counseling, which is really debt restructuring. And I think as more and more people become aware of it, if it fits their needs, it could be a fantastic solution to pay back your debt in a longer period of time. And at the same time, helping get the economy going.
Well, Oliver Debenesega, Debt Busters, always appreciate the time.
Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Christopher Dobbs, CEO of iStore South Africa. Christopher, appreciate the early morning time. Trading in old tech. I'm going to go through this process. I've got I was going to say it's an old iPhone 14. I suppose it is old. It's 2 years, but it works perfectly well. I want to buy the new 16. I can essentially trade it in and get a discount on that new phone.
Morning, Simon. Thanks for having me. Yes, absolutely. That's something we've been doing for a number of years now, is trying to make it a little bit more affordable for all our customers to get into a new phone. So you can absolutely trade in your iPhone 14, and we'll give you a really good price. In fact, I think we're offering the best price in the world at the moment in terms of trade-ins, even better than what Apple's offering overseas. So yeah, it's definitely an option.
And then what my old 14, that essentially would get refurbished and then sold as pre-owned. And I think the refurbished is the important part. I mean, I've bought a pre-owned before, and it comes in the fancy box and everything.
Yeah, so we'd take your phone. We'd obviously do the assessment in one of our stores, and then we'd send it to our facility where we actually then do further checks on the device. Mm-hmm. If the screen's cracked or there's some sort of problem on it, we'll replace the parts, we'll clean it up, we'll rebox it, we'll put the charging cable in and what have you. And then what we've done, just to give the customer peace of mind, we've added a 2-year warranty. So if you buy a brand new iPhone, it's a 12-month warranty, but we're saying on our pre-owned devices, we'll give you a 2-year warranty. That kind of takes out any questions about, you know, is there going to be something wrong with it? Will it break down after 6 months, etc.?
And one of the key things here is that it comes to me cheaper. But also, you, if I recall correctly, they will be graded. So there are different gradings, which and you know, none of them are going to be this thing is broken. They're all going to be working, viable, graded, and cheaper. It you know, I was just chatting with Debtbusters. It's tough out there for the consumer. This kind of gives us an entry point into top end tech.
Absolutely. Look, it's very tough out there. So on both sides of the equation, firstly on the trade end, it's helping the consumers that are feeling the financial pinch. And then also when they're buying a phone, maybe they can't afford the latest iPhone 16, but they can afford your traded in iPhone 14. And it's certainly making a difference. What it's also doing for us, though, it's expanding our customer base. So you might be a young student that can afford an iPhone 8, secondhand iPhone 8, which is a number of years old, but you aspire to own the Apple brand, and one day you'll be our iPhone 16 customer when they've finished their studies and got into a career.
It goes back as far as 8. I wouldn't have thought that. Because I'm thinking software. And, of course, the new one's got Apple Intelligence. That's unique to the 16. My 14 won't run that. But you can sell as far back as an iPhone 8.
Absolutely. I mean, we get customers trading in some 6s and 7s. So we've been selling 7s of late. That'll come to an end shortly. But similar ones. And as you rightly said, there's all sorts of different grades. Well, there's three main grades of the pre-owned devices, so customers can know, well, I'm buying this iPhone 8, it's in a good, better, or best condition, and you'll pay the price according to the condition and the phone you buy.
We've been talking here around, this gives me, as someone who's upgrading, a discount to my new phone. Someone who can't afford the 16 can come in at a low price point. But it's also about sustainability, because I mean, I'm thinking back 20 years ago. I don't know what I did with my old phones. They were pre-iPhones, of course. They only came out in 07. I probably put them in a drawer somewhere. This really, because I'm imagining some of those you're just going to take and essentially recycle.
Absolutely. Yeah, so Simon, I think everyone's got that drawer at home full of old cables and tech and what have you. So yes, it's doing a great job for recycling and being a little bit greener. So we encourage people to bring that drawer to our stores. We not only trade in iPhones and Macs and iPads and what have you, mm-hmm. but we also trade in Android devices and PCs and whatever. So customers come into our stores with literally a bundle of up to 5 devices and trade it in, and sometimes walk out with a new product without paying anything or very little.
How big is the pre-owned market?
Well, I'll speak for our pre-owned market.
Sure.
It's something that we started many years ago, and we mainly did it to help out our corporates that had sort of large fleets of Macs in their business, and they wanted to upgrade, and so we took them back, and that's kind of how it started many years ago. And we soon realized the value in these devices, and with a lot of Apple products, they tend to last for a very long time. So we literally started a small little pre-owned store in our basement on One Santon Drive, mm-hmm. and it was hugely popular. And so we've progressed from that little basement to we opened our first pre-owned store in Rosebank Mall, and now we've got one in just outside the waterfront, and we're about to open later this month in Canal Walk. But what's really been successful is our online business. So most of our customers buy their devices online, and yeah, the demand's just surged lately.
And you make a point. I mean, I've been talking iPhones, but actually this is broader. I mean, it wouldn't be an AirTag, of course, but it is Macs. It might even, I mean, Mac Minis, et cetera, et cetera. Probably the Apple Watches as well. I mean, a lot of that tech is tradable and refurbishable.
Absolutely, we do all the mainline Apple products, and then obviously, you know, having the footprint of the stores that we have, there's lots of products that are coming back that have come off demo and maybe shop soiled and what have you, and all mm-hmm. that gets kind of cleaned up and sold in our pre-owned stores.
We'll leave it there. That's Christopher Dobbs, CEO of iStore South Africa. Appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Have you bought secondhand tech? Have your vote, have your say. That's it for today. I was chatting with Jimmy Moyoha yesterday. BidCorp and AVI updates both had said consumers are still struggling. We asked you, as a consumer, how's your budget doing? Almost two-thirds of you voted tough. Real tough. A quarter said getting better, but slowly. And a small number of you said much better, but there weren't many in the much better. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Norbuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Why are U.S. bonds rallying?
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.